Oh, Mr. Dewey.
Yes?
Dear Mr. Hooey.
Hooey, not so
Do you think the 80th Congress did their best? There's inflation here today.
That's true.
There's no housing on the way.
No, there isn't.
Is there any remedy that you suggest?
Oh, Mr. Voter. Nice Mr. Voter. As my buddy Taft appropriately said, when the price is in excess, people really should eat less.
Then they won't need any houses.
No, they'll all be dead instead.
Oh, Mr. Dewey, dear Mr. Phooey.
Phooey, now that's
all right. Your statements sound like double talk to me.
Well, they are.
Can you tell me what's in store? Is it peace or is it war? What exactly is your foreign policy?
Oh, Mr. Voter, sweet Mr. Voter, Mr. Marshall's plan is really heaven sent. Peace on earth, goodwill to men, and a mighty strong UN.
Do you promise, Mr. Dewey?
Promise? Oh, I'll promise anything. I want to be the president.
Building Bridges, your community and labor report, brings you a news feature.
You know, Ken, with the Democrats moving to the right of center and the Republicans pandering to diversity, not to mention the involvement of Green Party candidate Ralph Nader and Reform Party candidate Patrick Buchanan, I'm reminded of the election of 1948.
Mimi, wasn't that the year that Thomas Dewey was the Republican candidate and Harry Truman the Democratic Party candidate?
And Henry Wallace ran as the Progressive Party candidate, and Strom Thurmond, oh yes, he was around in those days as well, ran as the candidate for the States' Rights Party. The Republican Dewey was soaring in the polls, and the Democrats were attacking the Republican Congress. And then, to everyone's surprise, Truman won.
Mimi, the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union, had a radio show in 1948. On the show, it boasted of the virtues of Harry Truman and attacked the Republican candidate Thomas Dewey. And guess who the program starred? The great communicator himself, a man who in later years changed sides to himself become president, but in 1948 was a liberal Democrat and president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, would you like to hear part of that ILGWU broadcast?
Absolutely.
This is the story of what the Republican 80th Congress and the National Association of Manufacturers have done to bring on inflation and set back the cause of liberal government in the United States. Presented by the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union, now to Ronald Reagan in Hollywood.
This is Ronald Reagan. You know me as a motion picture actor. But tonight I'm just a citizen, concerned about the national election next month, and more than a little impatient with those promises the Republicans made before they got control of Congress a couple of years ago. I remember listening to the radio on election night in 1946. Joseph Martin, the Republican Speaker of the House, said very solemnly, "We Republicans intend to work for a real increase in income for everybody by encouraging more production and lower prices without impairing wages or working conditions." But what actually happened? The profits of corporations have doubled, while workers' wages have increased by only one quarter. Profits have gone up four times as much as wages. And the small increase workers did receive was more than eaten up by rising prices. For example, here's an Associated Press dispatch I read the other day about Smith L. Carpenter, a craftsman in Union Springs, New York. Mr. Carpenter retired some years ago, thinking he had enough money saved up so that he could live out his last years without having to worry. But he didn't figure on this Republican inflation, which ate up all his savings, and so he's gone back to work. The reason this is news is Mr. Carpenter is 91 years old. Now, take as a contrast the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey, which reported a net profit of $210 million after taxes for the first half of 1948, an increase of 70% in 1 year. In other words, high prices have not been caused by higher wages, but by bigger and bigger profits. The Republican promises sounded pretty good in 1946, but what has happened since then, since the 80th Congress took over? Prices have climbed to the highest level in history. Although the death of the OPA was supposed to bring prices down through the natural process of free competition. Labor has been handcuffed by the vicious Taft-Hartley law. Social Security benefits have been snatched away from almost a million workers by the Gearhart bill. Fair employment practices, which had worked so well during wartime, have been abandoned. Veterans' pleas for low-cost homes have been ignored, and many people are still living in made-over chicken coops and garages. Tax reduction bills have been passed to benefit the higher income brackets alone. The average worker saved only $1.73 a week. In the false name of economy, millions of children have been deprived of milk once provided through the federal school lunch program. This was the payoff of the Republicans' promises. And this is why we must have new faces in the Congress of the United States. Democratic faces. This is why we must elect President Truman. For adequate low-cost housing. For civil rights. For prices people can afford to pay. And for a labor movement freed of the Taft-Hartley law.
Now let's hear historian Eric Fauna put the past in perspective.
What did you think of the speech, and why do you think, why are you going to vote for that man you just heard?
I would certainly support him for any office in the land. This was 1948. He's talking about issues of social class that are no longer part of our political dialogue today. The notion that the conditions of workers are actually worth considering by politicians is something that has completely faded out of our politics. In the 48 election, there were four parties, the Democrats and Republicans, of course, Dewey for the Republicans and Truman running for re-election as a Democrat. You had Henry Wallace on the left as the Progressive Party candidate, who was pushing even more strongly on these economic issues as well as civil rights and opposing the Cold War. And on the right, you had Strom Thurmond from South Carolina and the States' Rights Party, which was formed after the civil rights issue was raised strongly at the Democratic National Convention. And the Democratic Party in 48, for the first time since Reconstruction, made civil rights of blacks a major political issue, prompting a walkout of several southern states and the formation of the States' Rights Party. So Truman and Dewey, each of them was flanked by what appeared at the time to be pretty strong alternative parties. The 48 election was the first post-war election. It also, as Reagan's speech indicates, came after the Republicans had won control of Congress in 1946 and had gone on to pass the Taft-Hartley Act and many other very conservative measures. Many observers thought that the congressional election of 46 was a harbinger of Republican victory in 48. Truman led a very vigorous campaign against the Congress and against the Republicans and really reinvigorated the New Deal coalition by playing on workers' fears that the country might slip back into a depression, that the Republicans were simply draining off income from the working class in order to benefit profits and the well-to-do. Truman succeeded in tying Dewey to the very right-wing Republican Congress and in reinvigorating this New Deal coalition. He also, for the first time, made civil rights a big issue in the campaign, recognizing the growing significance of the black vote in the North. Blacks could not vote in the South at this time, but because of World War II, there had been a significant migration of blacks into the northern and western states where they could vote, and the black vote was becoming very crucial. So Truman ran a very, very intelligent and vigorous campaign. Dewey ran as if he was absolutely assured of election. The Wallace campaign was, of course, a tremendous disappointment to those further on the left who had really hoped that this was the opportunity for a permanent third party to be created. Wallace pushed much more strongly than Truman on civil rights. Indeed, he campaigned in the South for black rights, which took a certain amount of courage at this time, and pulled Truman toward that position in order to maintain his hold on the black vote. But the big issue between Truman and Wallace was foreign policy, and Wallace was strongly opposed to the Cold War, the Truman Doctrine of containment of communism all over the world, and the endless involvement of the United States in suppressing revolutionary movements all over the world. As the election drew near, much of Wallace's support evaporated as many of the more left-wing voters began to fear Dewey's election and felt that a vote for Wallace would be wasted. So it was a very historic election. It maintained the grip of New Deal policies on the presidency. It also secured the dominance in the Democratic Party of what you might call the Cold War liberals, those who were liberal on domestic policy but very powerfully anti-communist and pro-Cold War in international affairs. Soon after the election, the flurry for civil rights was dropped by these liberals. So in terms of race, the 48 election was a harbinger of things to come, but the 50s were not a time when either party really did much on the race issue until the mass movement of blacks really began.
Oh, Mr. Dewey. You've been listening to selections from a 1948 election year radio program featuring Arnold Stang and Ronald Reagan. Commentary was provided by Professor Eric Fauna.
This has been a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special report, filed by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
I represent the working men.
Do you promise, Mr. Dewey?
Promise? Oh, I'll promise anything. I want to be the president.